I think we can start to be prompt. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the investor call for the Louisiana Public Facilities Authority Revenue Bonds, Series 2017. Just so everyone knows, the audio of this call is being recorded, and the meeting will be, the audio will be posted as it has been posted in previous years on the Archdiocese's website. The agenda for today is brief, but let me give a quick overview and then we'll just get right to it. We're going to do our introductions. Then we'll give an overview and take questions about the Chapter 11 case of the Archdiocese. And then we'll take questions about the annual financial information that was posted to Emma on December 23 for fiscal year ended 2020. The Archdiocese is currently working on a semi-annual report for the six-month period ending June 30th, 2020, and it will be uploaded to Emma when it is complete. For introductions, for the Archdiocese, my name is Elizabeth Futrell, and also on the phone with me is Mark Mintz. I and Mark Mintz are both lawyers at Jones Walker, and we are bankruptcy counsel to the Archdiocese. And when I say the Archdiocese, I mean the Roman Catholic Church for the Archdiocese of New Orleans, and I will just call that the Archdiocese, which is the obligor on the 2017 bonds. Also with me sitting in the frame, if you have joined us by Zoom, you'll see Kathleen Zuniga. She is a financial advisor to the Archdiocese. She is with Carr Riggs Ingram, CPA and advisors. We also have with us today Jeff Entwistle, who is the Archdiocese's chief financial officer. I'm not sure, but I think joining us by phone is Father Patrick Carr, who is the vicar of finance for the Archdiocese. And then we also have on the phone by Zoom Meredith Hawthorne. Meredith is with Foley Udell. She is bond counsel to the Archdiocese. At this time, since we've done our introductions, I would like those of you on the phone or joining us by Zoom to let us know who you are and who you represent.
Stephanie Ferry with Raymond James. We were the underwriter for the Series 2017 bonds.
Thank you.
Gil Southall, Wells Capital Management. We're a holder of some bonds.
I'm sorry, Bill. Could you say your last name again?
Oh, sure. Gil Southwell, holder of some bonds.
Ann Kibler from Nuveen. We're also a holder.
Ellen Presso with Invesco. We're also a holder.
I'm sorry, I did not hear you.
Ellen Presso, K-R-E-S-O, with Invesco.
Kevin DeBrava with TMI, the bond trustee.
What was your name again? I'm sorry.
It's Kevin DeBrava.
Right. I'm sorry. I know. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Thank you.
Is Colleen Murphy on the phone? I know she represents the bond trustee.
This is Kevin. I see her on, but I'm not sure if her.
Let's see. She has it on. She doesn't have it on mute. Colleen, if you're on the phone, we can't hear you, but it looks like you're connected. We should have a couple more people.
This is Grace Chang with Franklin Templeton Funds, and we are a bondholder.
Thank you.
Sean VC with Nat Alliance Securities, bondholder.
Sean, could you say your last name again, please?
VC.
Okay.
And this is Kevin DeBrava again. Colleen is on the phone. She said something is wrong with her audio.
Okay. Well, Well, Colleen, I have my phone with me. If there's something you really need to communicate, I'll try to look at my phone and look at emails from you since your audio is not working correctly. The next order, is there anybody else? I think that was everybody. If there's anybody else, please let me know.
This is Dora Lee from Bellhaven. We're bondholders.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. The next item on the agenda, thank you for everybody for introducing yourselves and who you represent. The next thing on the agenda was just a brief overview of the Chapter 11 case. As everyone knows, I'm sure the Archdiocese filed a Chapter 11 case voluntarily on May 1, 2020, which is pending in the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana. The Archdiocese filed the case for all the normal expected reasons to confirm a plan so that it can distribute its assets to its creditors in accordance with the laws and priorities of the bankruptcy code, sustained its financial viability, and continue its religious and charitable ministries and programs across the eight civil parishes in which it generally operates. The exclusive period to file a Chapter 11 plan has been extended in favor of the Archdiocese until April 30th, 2021. So right now, the only entity that can file or propose a plan through April 30th is the Archdiocese. It is not unusual and likely that the Archdiocese would perhaps seek an additional extension of time to propose a plan. Some of the major events in the case are, first off, the deadline for filing claims. There are two deadlines for filing claims in the case. The first is for claims alleging any sort of sexual abuse claim against the Archdiocese. The deadline for filing those claims is not until March 1 of 2021. All other claims, the deadline for filing claims was November 30th, 2020. And the bond trustee TMI has filed a proof of claim on behalf of bondholders before that deadline. The bond trustee and the Archdiocese have entered into a settlement agreement. That settlement agreement is discussed in detail in the financial information that was posted for year ended June 30th at pages A17 through A18, and also is described in a notice that the bond trustee posted on or about November 3 on Emma. But basically, in its most fundamental terms, without getting into all of the weeds and the detail, the settlement does permit the Archdiocese to make interest payments on the bonds, and those payments are subject to, however, the rights of parties to seek to recharacterize the payments as principal payments. Since the settlement agreement was approved by the bankruptcy court, the Archdiocese has made two interest payments on the bonds, one that had already gone, that had come due after the case was filed, but before the settlement was approved, and the second one in the normal course of business as that payment became due. The Chapter 11 case was filed with the ultimate goal of confirming a 100% plan of reorganization so that all claims would be paid in full. The Archdiocese entered into the settlement with the bond trustee in part to ensure the ability of the plan, of the, any plan proponent, to reinstate the bond debt in connection with a confirmed Chapter 11 plan. Reinstatement would require, of course, the cure of any remaining monetary defaults on the bonds such as the principal payments that would have otherwise become due on the bonds, because we're not making those principal payments. Another important event has been the activity related to the creditors committee. As in all Chapter 11 cases of significance, a Chapter 11 committee of unsecured creditors was formed, and your bond trustee was on that committee until October 8th, when TMI was removed from the committee, which left the committee comprised of 6 tort claimants and none of the commercial or liquidated holders of claims against the Archdiocese. On October 28th, the bond trustee filed a motion for an entry of an order requiring the U.S. trustee to appoint a separate committee, and later filed a motion to bifurcate its previous motion for the court to rule on whether a new committee of unsecured creditors should be formed, because the existing committee does not adequately represent the entire creditor body. An evidentiary hearing was held on that motion, that bifurcated motion by TMI, on December 17th. And at the conclusion of that hearing, the bankruptcy court took the matter under advisement. The last thing I wanted to mention is that on July 3rd, 2020, the Unsecured Creditors Committee did file a motion seeking dismissal of the Chapter 11 case based on an allegation that it was filed in bad faith and that the Archdiocese was not under any financial distress. An evidentiary hearing was held on that matter on August the 20th, and that matter is also under advisement. Those are all the prepared comments I had about the Chapter 11 case. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about the case if you would just first say who you are and who you represent again, so the record is clear.
This is Gil Southall from Wells Cap. I'm just wondering if Enola is going to the Archdiocese is going to be posting any information regarding the sexual abuse claim damage amounts.
I didn't hear the first part. If who's going to be posting?
Oh, the Archdiocese.
If the Archdiocese, because I'm sure there will be a lot more detail available about those claims after the bar date. The bar date, as I said earlier, is not till March 1. After the bar date has gone, the Archdiocese will then look at the claims, reevaluate, its assessment of the claims, and I'm sure it'll be a matter of great interest to everyone, and there will be something about it in pleadings. There will be things about it in filings we make.
Okay, thank you. So that would include potential insurance coverage?
We have a separate, we do have personal misconduct insurance. I am not the person that is very familiar with that. We have a separate counsel who's special insurance counsel for the Archdiocese that's at Blank Room. And so I really don't know how much detail we'll be giving at what point about the insurance coverage with respect to those claims. That's
okay. Because, you might normally see an insurer with a subrogation claim file, a contingent claim in the case, and I'm not sure that's happened yet.
Well, there were a lot of contingent claims filed, but you're right. I don't recall that I saw one filed by an insurance company.
Yeah.
That's okay. A matter of public record.
Because obviously that type of creditor would be a good addition to the potential true unsecured creditors committee. Anyway,
Okay, well, you're going to keep us posted. That sounds good.
Right.
That's all the questions I have right now.
The insurance company's lawyers have been, the lawyers for the insurance company have been active participants in the Chapter 11 case.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Good afternoon, it's Alan Kressel with Invesco. Can you tell us how many commercial creditors are there?
I don't have a precise count, but there are numerous loans. There are some loans that were made before, there are numerous other unsecured claims that were filed. Some of them are direct obligations of the Archdiocese, and then in addition, you have the SAG bonds that are a contingent liability based on the Archdiocese guarantee of the bonds issued for the SAG project, which is discussed in the financial information. In addition, we have a 40-plus million unfunded liability on pension obligations. But I don't have a precise number of how many other unsecured creditors there are that hold commercial or liquidated debt. I think that was your question.
Yes, thank you. Is there regarding that SAG debt, guaranteed debt, has that been challenged in bankruptcy yet, the guarantee?
No.
So Archdiocese is expecting to assume that debt similar to the bonds.
Well, yes. When I said earlier that the goal in the case was to have 100% plan, 100% plan would not try to walk away from the SAG bonds. That's not how I would define that.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Gil Southwell from Wells Cap. Just one other question. Under canon law, I understand that the Archdiocese is encouraged to pay its debts. Is there any potential support from other Catholic institutions for this Archdiocese?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean, but I mean, the Archdiocese is a separate juridical entity incorporated under Louisiana law. It's a nonprofit entity.
Right, I understand that. But canon law does have some provisions about Archdiocese paying their bills.
Well, I'm not a canon lawyer. I certainly know very little about canon law, but normal law requires us to pay our debts too. So, I've already said what our goal in the case is to pay our allowed claims.
Okay, thanks.
All right, unless I hear anything else, I think that we finished with the discussion of the Chapter 11 case. And what we would like to do now is to move to the unaudited annual financial information that was posted for year ended 2020 and ask, instead of doing a presentation, what we thought we would do, since you all have had an opportunity to look at that report, is for you to ask questions. And Kathleen Zuniga, who's sitting next to me, is prepared to answer those questions. If you have a question, if you could please identify yourself and who you represent before you ask the question for the record.
Hi, it's Ann Kibler from Nuveen. Could you speak to the large increase in cash and cash equivalents, what that was attributable to?
Sure. The large increase was really due to timing. Those were funds that were received. They initially went into the operating account from the deposit and loan fund. There was an influx just due to the timing of tuition from depositors in the deposit and loan fund. The deposits were made, and typically that is then transferred over to Portfolio B, which is in the investments line item. So there was about $9 million that's in cash that would normally, from a timing perspective, be represented in investments.
Okay, thank you.
And then the other part is really just timing of trade payables.
That's Ann Kibler again. I guess, in regard, how are actuals performing the budget for 2021?
I guess in general, I think we were trying to just stick to the information that was presented in 2020. The 2021 semi-annual financial information, we're actually going to be finalizing, we're in the process of finalizing, and it will be posted on Emma. I believe the requirement is 45 days after year end, but we have made several operational improvements and enhancements and cost reductions in this current fiscal year.
Thank you.
Alan Cressler of Vesco again, I guess related question, 19 versus 20 unaudited management in general. Could you provide a little color? What are the drivers there of quite a significant increase year over year?
Sure. That's primarily due to an additional reserve that was recorded and that's discussed in the loan loss reserve. And primarily a $21 million reserve. It's mentioned on A24 in the annual financial information was recorded, and that was based on an evaluation that was done of the loans as of June 30, 2020. And that methodology really consisted of looking at every loan on a loan-by-loan basis, looking at past due amounts, the ability of the borrower to repay those amounts, and the timing of that expected repayment. In addition, after the specific reserves were recorded on loans that were identified in this estimate, there was also this year a general reserve recorded of about 5% on pre-petition loans that was recorded and included in that reserve. But the total reserve adjustment as of June 30 was $21 million, and that's the primary driver for that increase compared to last year.
Hi, this is Grace Chang with Franklin. Related to that loan loss or the reserves, how much was that contributed by COVID, or were these institutions not doing well prior to COVID?
Grace, I didn't do a specific analysis of the pre and post COVID. We looked at the facts and circumstances as of June 30, so that would probably be difficult to tell, but I would tell you that there's probably, COVID happened March 15th. So you're looking at, we were 3 months in as of June 30 when the reserves were adjusted. You're looking at August, so we probably had 5 or 6 months And so, you know, really looking at the ability to repay or the slowing of payments, there was certainly some impact, but I didn't try to measure it specifically to COVID.
Mm-hmm. And then from past experience, once you have the write down, what is the recovery expected on these loans?
And I'm not sure I understand your question.
Right, in the past,
these are reserves. We did not write down the balance. We recorded a contra account, a reserve estimate of mm-hmm. the amounts that we think are doubtful for collection.
Okay, right. Because so, sometimes, I guess, in banks, when you take reserves, but sometimes there are recoveries and from the reserves. Do you expect these? Is there an expected recovery of these reserves?
There could potentially be a recovery on the reserves. We did not record a recovery estimate. We took that into account when we estimated what we expected to collect.
I see. Okay. Sorry, I have a few more questions. I see the schools right now, you have about 74 schools compared to 79 back in 2019. Were the closing of the schools related to COVID, or were those schools where you were planning to close them?
Not related to COVID.
Not related, okay. And also, I have questions regarding the pool assets. I'm looking on page A23 of the continuing disclosure documents where it talked about among the pooled assets portfolio of the $219 million, part of that is you're investing for third parties, some of them, and part of it is the Archdiocese and the money. So it's stated in fiscal 2020, there's about $88.1 million that's invested by the corporation, which includes money from the loan deposit. But then when you look at the next page where you have the loan deposit and minus how much it was loaned out, there should be at least $99.1 million that money was not loaned out that was from the deposit fund. Now, shouldn't the amount of the pooled assets that belongs to corporations, the $88 million should be larger than the $99.1 million, right? I'm just a little bit confused with the numbers.
Give me a minute. Let me just analyze what you're looking at.
Yeah, because there were $99.1 million that was not lent out. So on page A23, there should be at least $99.1 million, but it's only showing $88.1 million of investments owned by the corporation.
I'm not sure I can answer, Grace. I'll have to get back to you on that interest of time. But okay. I'll get your response.
And then for the separate invested portfolio, the $69 million, is that amount, the entire amount belongs to the Archdiocese?
No, there could be other amounts in there that could be custodial funds that the Archdiocese has received, special collections, and some other items, but no.
So is it possible to also break that down similar to how you broke down the pooled asset portfolio? So we kind of get a better idea of how much of this investment portfolio truly belongs to the Archdiocese.
Yes, we can do that.
Okay, great.
That kind of information would also be in the monthly operating reports, wouldn't it?
Probably not, because it just has the, I don't think that that requires that, no.
Sorry, can I have you, I could let other people ask, and if there's no other questions, I could come back.
I was Alan Cresso with Invesco, just to follow up on Grace's question there. So she pointed out that there are five schools closed. Is a $20 million reserve related to those schools, or are you reserving for other loans?
Those are for other loans. Those were not on closed schools.
Okay, thank you.
Well, if no one else is asking questions, sorry, I'm back. This is Grace Chang with Franklin again. Can we get more information about St. Anthony's Garden? We understand the obligation. I'm trying to get a better understanding of the structure of the guarantee, how St. Anthony's Garden is doing. I know under certain circumstances where the obligation of the Archdiocese goes away, and where is St. Anthony Gardens at this point in terms of their occupancy, their days cash on hand, debt service coverage? Is there something that you information you could share with us?
I don't have it readily in front of me. Really the information, I'd like to stick to the June 30, and I can see what we can provide subsequent to that. But the occupancy is running at 68% as of June 30, and we know they are we're still guaranteeing the debt. That's about all I have to share today.
So are you still guaranteeing 100% or 35% of the debt?
It's 100%. It's 100%. 100% of the debt is guaranteed.
No, 100%. I see.
Yes.
Okay.
The calculation for the covenants has different percentages baked in due to the requirements of how the indenture works, or the loan agreement. But at this point it's 100% guarantee.
It's still 100%. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. In terms of the subordinate debt, I'm trying to understand that a little bit better as well. Archdiocese was a holder of the original subordinate debt of $12.6 million. And then that was refied with Hancock Whitney Bank for $12 million.
I think that's right. That sounds right.
So, but the Archdiocese guarantees what Hancock Whitney Bank subordinate debt. Is that the position that the Archdiocese has right now?
Yes. The Archdiocese guaranteed the bonds, and then the Archdiocese is directly liable on the loan, on the subordinated debt.
Oh, they're directly, so they're actually paying the debt service on the subordinate debt?
No.
Got it. But the $40 million senior debt is the St. Anthony's Garden is paying the debt service on that?
Yes.
Okay. And why was, I know the subordinate debt back in 2019 had $9.98 million outstanding. Why did that jump to $12.5 million in June 20?
I don't have the history on that, but I know they refinanced it, but I don't know what caused the increase.
Okay. But then on page, I think it was 15, where you're listing St. Anthony's Gardens debt, and it shows $10 million. That's the subordinate debt, right?
Yes. Okay. It's been paid down.
It has been paid down. So I don't kind of, here it shows $10 million. And then on page 825, it shows $12.5 million. So is it really $10 million of obligation, or is it $12.5 million?
I think it was originally refinanced at $12 million, and it's been paid down subsequently.
Can we get some clarity on that?
Sure.
That would be helpful. Okay. Okay, so the Archdiocese is paying the principal interest payment on the subordinate debt.
St. Anthony's Gardens.
St. Anthony is paying that too.
Oh, so I'm sorry.
I think you heard her incorrectly.
I'm sorry?
St. Anthony's Gardens is paying on both of those debt instruments. The Archdiocese is just guaranteeing it.
They're guaranteeing both of them. Okay. But then is the subordinated debt is secured by part of the investment portfolio of the Archdiocese?
No.
I thought I read it somewhere.
I guess is what you're saying, Grace, that if the debt were to be called and the Archdiocese were to, you know, have to pay the debt if they weren't in bankruptcy, that they would have to liquidate part of their investment portfolio to, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, or they're secured by it. It's like we're an unsecured creditor, but I think my understanding, the subordinate debt is actually a secure creditor. So they're secured by a portion. I was reading the bankruptcy filing, this is a while ago. Seems like it was, they're guaranteed by, or secured by $10 million of the Archdiocese investment portfolio.
When we're talking about legal terms here, it is Hancock Whitney holds the bonds,
mm-hmm.
all of the bonds, and they also hold this debt, the subordinated debt now. It is their possession that they are secured to some extent, and we have entered into a cash collateral order with Hancock Whitney Bank with respect to those claims.
Okay. And how much cash collateral?
My understanding is we agreed as adequate protection to keep a certain amount in a certain bank account. All of that is a matter of public record in the cash collateral order that was filed in the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Hancock Whitney has filed a proof of claim in the case as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which has all the documents and everything else attached.
Mm-hmm.
They have the loan agreements and guarantees and everything else attached.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned that the Archdiocese has taken specific steps to reduce operating costs. Is that something you could talk about in this call, more specific about it, or?
Sure. We've been working with the special committee of the Finance Council and management to really evaluate the operations, put stronger controls in place on spending, strengthen the underwriting requirements and the loan and the deposit loan fund, consolidation of operations, consolidation of purchasing power with vendors and negotiating better pricing, overall cost reductions, also looking at going forward, just revenue enhancement opportunities that could be generated under the diocese operations.
Has the Archdiocese gone through any layoffs, reduction in force?
There was a WARN Act issued on a number of employees after the bankruptcy case was filed.
I'm sorry, lastly, looking at the assessments that the Archdiocese collects, it seems like the pandemic hasn't had a big impact, negative impact on the collections. Is that correct?
I would tell you we haven't seen that just yet. It's difficult. We don't get timely information from the parishes that really, but just looking at the payments and the deposit loan fund on the loans, parishes that have loans, as well as, online giving, but church participation and attendance is down for sure. But, I think it's a very fluid situation with the pandemic, especially in Orleans Parish. We've got pretty strict requirements from a shutdown, and I would tell you it changes daily. So, we're hopeful and that the vaccine will have some positive effects in the next few months, but can't give any certainty around that, but we are monitoring it as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But in your budget, you're still showing actually assessment increasing in fiscal 21.
Yes, because we haven't seen any trending downward as far as assessments and slowing of payments yet. But we do know that, really it's on a parish by parish basis too. If you have an older population in a parish, some of them probably, don't have the online access or aren't tech savvy. But we have not seen, just from our evaluation of the assessments receivable and the payments on assessments, we haven't yet seen a significant decline.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. I think in the report that we filed, we said that that we're still evaluating what the disruption is and how it will impact our financial condition and operations. I think that's an accurate statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Great. And is your eventual goal is to have at least a break-even operation? I see in fiscal 21, you're still showing budgeting a $4.8 million loss.
The eventual goal is, we continue to revise and look at this budget as changes are implemented with respect to getting to a goal of positive cash flow and positive operations. So yes.
But not in fiscal 21. It's going to take a few more years to achieve that goal.
I think, I'm hesitant to say what the ultimate impact is on fiscal 21, but I think the full, full impact of the changes, because they are still being implemented and, some have been implemented, some are in the process, and some are still being deliberated. And so we won't see a big, I am hopeful that we'll be able to, barring anything that, adjustments on reserves, that we'll be able to show positive, favorable operations going forward.
But we'll know more when we file our next report.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Grace, did you have any more questions?
Oh, no, that's it. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Not from WellsCap.
I, my understanding is I am certainly no bond lawyer. I'm a Chapter 11 lawyer, but my understanding is that any follow-up that we provide in response to the questions today will need to be posted on Emma, and we will be working on that.
Thank you. That'd be helpful.
Great. Thank you.
All right. I think that's the conclusion of the investor call. We're glad you could join us, and I hope you have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.